Hello everybody, welcome to the Boxing Science Podcast. This is episode 47, where I'm going to be answering your questions regarding a range of different subjects regarding sports science in boxing and combat sports. We're going to be covering a range of different subjects, which include 30-second max out sprints, neck training for boxing, and also looking at conditioning variations if an athlete can't run. So before we get on with this week's questions, a little bit of an insight to some of our analytics. Now, these pieces of content I absolutely love doing because I put that I'm going to do a Q&A in the community tab, and subscribers of Boxing Science get their questions across, and some of the questions are absolutely fantastic, really thought-provoking as well, and I like to help you guys out because the main goal of Boxing Science is to transfer our knowledge and experience, our training methods into your specific training environments. How to get involved with these Q&A sessions is to be a Boxing Science subscriber. When I put out a post in the community tab, comment with your questions there. So if you're not a Boxing Science subscriber yet, and a lot of people aren't that follow the channel, they're looking at the analytics, 68.9% of people that watch our channel actually don't subscribe. So we need to change that ratio to make sure that as many people are subscribing, engaging with the content, so this channel can grow and we can provide you even bigger and better content in 2024. So if you're not subscribed yet, hit that subscribe button. If you like the video, hit the like button, and let's get on with this week's episode. So the first question from Kuriyoko8493, what exercise is good for 30-second max efforts besides sprinting outside or on a curved treadmill / assault bike? Is a rowing machine or heavy bag punch out good enough, or just a normal regular gym bike? We've covered this on previous episodes, talking about how to implement 30-second max out sprints, where I go into the specific details on how to optimize 30-second max out sprints for boxing and combat sports. The main thing that you need to consider is a methodology. At Boxing Science, we prioritize the curved treadmill or the assault air bike. The reason why the curved treadmill is self-powered, so you can reach maximum intensities, and also the curved slats are able to reduce them impact forces and reduce the likelihood of injury of running at max intensity, especially under fatigue. Doing the air bike is pretty similar, but we reduce all them impact forces by doing it on the bike, and also it encourages maximum intensity. And also there is lower body and upper body stimulus to this. To get the full conditioning that will transfer into boxing and combat sports, to get a full body workout is going to be beneficial. So talking about different methodologies now, and it can be quite difficult to pick the correct one. If I can't do curve or air bike, I'd be looking to do a prowler. So doing a prowler with your body weight on it and making sure you've got enough space to do 30 seconds of an intense activity. And also what's really important here is to make sure that you put out a target to make sure that you're increasing that intensity in the first 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and 30 seconds. When people go on the prowler, they end up pacing themselves. So you're wanting that sprint start, that fast start, and get a target under 10 seconds. The main problem with outdoor running, increase impact forces. So if you're doing it out on the pavement or on the road, there's a lot of impact forces going there. So increased likelihood of injuries. I don't really do 30-second max out sprints outdoors. I've done it on a track before. Athletes started picking up like injuries, hamstring injuries, becoming really, really fatigued and affecting the boxing. So doing it out on a track is okay, but you've got to try and manage them loads. So if I was going to do it outside, I'd be doing it on a grassy hill. So this will help reduce them impact forces because we're going on a hill, and also reducing the impact forces because the surface is softer. It's very difficult to do 30-second max out sprints on a watt bike. For boxers, they haven't got that proficiency in the cycling technique, and also it's very lower body focus, so you end up getting some local muscular fatigue that will affect the intensity that you're able to reach during 30-second sprints on a watt bike. And also on a rowing machine, it's very hard to reach that maximum intensity at the start because obviously you've got to get a really good technique in terms of stroke rate. There's only so fast that you can end up rowing on a rowing machine. So you won't get that max out intensity in them first 10 seconds. looking at this question, my main answer is doing it on a curved treadmill or air bike is the preferred. Prowler is the third option, and then doing it outside, but making sure that you're doing it on a grassy hill to help reduce them impact forces. And just make sure, if you're doing it outside or on a prowler, making sure that you're getting that intensity by setting out a set distance for that athlete to hit within the first 10 seconds. Okay, the next question from MNZL6972. When programming exercises for your sessions, how do you go about managing exercises in regards to strength, power, and speed? Is this determined by what stage a fighter is in their training camp? Example, end of camp focusing more speed-based exercises with maintenance of power and strength. Exactly like you more or less answered your question there. We do reverse engineer the process in terms of what does the outcome look like. We want our athletes to be fast and explosive. We want their exercises to be light so they're not fatiguing them going into fight week and going into their fight, but also not affecting their final spars and everything. So that final phase there is more speed, strength focus. And then leading into that is strength, speed, strength, also maximum strength. It's quite interesting that you asked this question because I do receive a lot of questions about programming. One of our most popular videos on YouTube is around programming and planning training. The main reason why people get confused on this is because there's so many different periodization models, lots of different programs, different ways to set things out. It can be quite confusing. At Boxing Science, we try and simplify things into block periodization, where we work on a specific adaptation for a certain amount of weeks. We try and do strength, maximum strength, up until around about 30 days away from competition. The reason why there's this terminology called residual gains, where there's a certain window where you don't have to train a certain modality, physical characteristic, where ends up having negative effects on your performance. Basically, with maximum strength, you can stop training for 30 days and still retain your strength for 30 days. So we know that if we take maximum strength out 4 or 5 weeks out from training camp, we're not going to be seeing like any detrimental effects going into their competition. However, with speed, that is around about 5 days. So we need to make sure that we're keeping speed in the program towards the latter stages of camp. However, we still do include speed exercises throughout a 10, 12, 14 week program. And the reason why is because we're wanting to keep topping up that speed all the way through. We don't want to just go, right, 2-3 weeks out from a fight, we're just going to go and do speed work. And we're just having to switch on their ability to produce force quickly. If you're not training that modality, especially with how competition focused boxing is in terms of training, the massive competition to training ratio in terms of like how much an athlete has to train compared to how often they actually compete. So we need to make sure that speed remains in the program throughout its entirety. So it starts off obviously maximum strength and building up them strength foundations. But in the program, we have an extended warm-up where this consists of a plyometric exercise, something like counter movement jump or pogos, paired with a single leg exercise in terms of plyometrics, something like an ice skater and different variations of that. And then we also have a punch-specific exercise, such as a landmine punch or med ball punch throw. And this maintains that speed and that kinetic chain sequencing throughout the program, topping that up all the way through to speed strength phase and speed phases. So then they're ready to optimize that training block right there. So that's a very generic overview. What I would say is that we tailor the programs to specific individual, specific situation, specific training goals and everything like that. This is the way that we do it from a general standpoint, but we also, there's a lot of moving parts for each athlete. So that's why we take such a bespoke approach with our professional athletes and also the athletes that come in on our remote consultancy packages. Karama Lamore, 3797. Neck pain from neck exercises. I don't know whether this person is saying that they're suffering from neck pain or do you get neck pain doing neck exercises. Either or, it brings us on to a very important subject on making sure that neck exercises are actually done with safe practice. The neck is a very delicate area. I've talked a lot on the Boxing Science YouTube channel before about neck bridges for boxing, whether I do it or not. You see all the intense like neck bridge exercises that Mike Tyson did and Golovkin did. These are very, very intense. You're putting your neck into a very vulnerable position under increased loads. So this can create short-term or long-term injuries. So Mike Tyson said about his neck bridges, saying that that had an impact on his spine health in later life. Even though that this gets the neck thick and strong, there's a lot of safer practices that you can put in place. So the safest way to do it is doing isometrics, whether that's in a seated or a standing position, whether you're doing prone or supine, or the lateral actions. When you first start it, doing it under higher volumes, whether that's 15, 20 seconds, or maybe even 30 second holds, but having an RPE that's quite low. So RPE, rate of perceived exertion, scale of 1 to 10 of how hard that you're finding it. If you're doing it over like 20, 30 seconds, you want an RPE of around about 3 or 4. So this is lower intensity, but higher volume. When you're doing it with partner assisted and looking for higher intensity actions, this would be an RPE of around about 8 or 9 out of 10. You're not wanting to get a 10 out of 10. Constantly feeding back with the athlete of how hard they're finding it. For example, I'm having to really pull on Fabio Wardley, because he's got one of the strongest necks that I've ever seen. I'm really, really pulling on him, but then I'm asking him, how does that feel out of 10? And he's often saying 7, 8, maybe a 9 out of 10. And this is for a duration hold around about 3 to 5 seconds. Very low volume on that. So 3 to 5 seconds, 3 reps each side. You want to do about 3 sets. But this is a periodized approach. So we start off the boxing size neck training with longer volumes to build up them strength foundations and that robustness. And that leads on to increases in intensity towards the end of training camp and towards the fight day. So with this approach being structured, getting feedback on the intensity and how it feels, this ensures that not only are we getting our neck stronger in a functional way, we're also increasing the safety of this as well. So it's really important, follow these methods to make sure that the neck exercises that you're implementing are going to be effective, but most importantly, safe for your athletes. So I've got a question from David V101. If you do not have to be worried about weight gain in terms of muscle mass, which is good for any combat athlete, how would you adjust the strength training to a boxer? Training boxing 3 to 4 times a week as well as kickboxing. I would say to be doing like higher volumes in terms of like sets. So rather than doing 3 or 4 sets, maybe doing 4 or 5, you can do cluster training, which is increasing that volume but maintaining that intensity. So if you're looking to try and put on some muscle, last thing that you want to do is do high volume sets. You're reducing that load, reducing that rate of force development, and you end up getting kind of slow twitch muscle fiber gain rather than what we want to do is fast twitch muscle fiber gain. With cluster training, what you can do is do 3 to 4 repetitions, rest 10 to 20 seconds, and then add on another 3 to 4 reps. So we're increasing that volume under increased weight load. We're still maintaining that rate of force development because we've got increased intensity. With that rest, we maintain that rate of force development over a longer amount of reps. So we do this, whether it's trap bar deadlift, doing hip thrusts, squats for the lower body, and also we do it for upper body as well. We also like to do drop sets, so where we're dropping the weight load, either on like a pressing action, we might be pressing the 40 kilo chest press, do about 5 repetitions, dropping it, and then doing another 5 repetitions on a lighter weight load. We can also do this through supersets, where we do a heavy press, drop it, and then do like some banded press ups, changing the exercise, but we're still targeting that same muscle group. But because we're changing the exercise, we still maintain that intensity over a longer volume. Then also we've got blood flow restriction training. So BFR training is really beneficial in targeting the fast twitch muscle fibers around the arms, upper body, and also the lower body as well. So what this does, it restricts the blood flow towards the muscle, fatigues the slow twitch muscle fibers, so then you can target fast twitch muscle fiber development under reduced loads. So they're the 4 key ways into gaining muscle size and strength all at the same time without having a detrimental effect on your boxing. So question from Sesh 113. What is the best way to target central adaptations for fit athletes if running is not a viable option? So what is the best way to target the red zone if running isn't an option? So I've got two key methods. We've got the assault bike and we've got circuits. The assault bike is probably the preferred tool because it's where we can manage the intensity. However, what the problem is that athletes might get muscular fatigue, might raise in muscle acidosis when they're trying to kick on and through the gears. So doing like kind of longer intervals, which is associated with central adaptations, can be quite difficult. And also when we're doing spikes in intensity, let's say if we're doing 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, sometimes I can't reach the level of intensity that's required to get into that red zone. What I do on an assault bike is do pyramid conditioning. So where we're doing longer duration intervals, but we don't do too many of them. So we'll do 4 minutes on, 2 minutes off, and then move on to 2 minutes on, 1 minute off, do a few reps there, 1 minute on, 30 seconds off, few reps there. Then we finish off with some high intensity sprints, 30 seconds on, 15 seconds off. And with this way, we're able to keep creeping up that intensity, reducing that rest time, and then this helps elevate our heart rate into the red zone. And if you're wanting any more guidance with this, we've got the Assault Bike Conditioning Program, where you can get a full 10-week program on the assault bike. And even if you're not just wanting to follow a straight 10-week program on the assault bike, there's a range of different sessions that you can drop and put in anywhere. Go check that out, Assault Bike Conditioning for boxing. You can also get 50% off by using the discount code ASSAULTBIKE50. The second method that I'd use is circuits. So red zone circuits, very popular tool that we use at Boxing Science, whether we're down here at the Boxing Science Performance Center or in the gym, in the boxing gym, where we've got limited equipment. We do limited equipment workouts and we do body weight workouts. Now, it all depends on what's stopping you from running. So if it's a very severe lower body injury that you can't put any force through, that changes the exercises that you can do. So for example, on a red zone circuit, we'd be doing high knee running, burpees, doing jumps, a wide range of different exercises that include the lower body. So if the lower body is severely injured and you can't do them exercises, you have to use some upper body conditioning tools such as like battle ropes, shadow boxing, med ball slams, a few different ways that you can get that heart rate up and making sure that you've got that intensity there. So reps of anywhere between 20 and 30 seconds with a very short recovery window. And that will help you get the right intensity to spike that heart rate up to 90% in maximum heart rate, but also a short recovery window to make sure that that heart rate isn't dropping in between. So I've got a question from Aiden Leong TV. Is it bad to do anaerobic circuit-based exercises 5 times a week to get fit for boxing? I'm not going to say it's bad because everybody's got their own training methods, but what I would say at Boxing Science, we try and limit circuits to maybe even once or twice per week because we prioritize our conditioning to be done through running or on the assault bike because we can manage and really prescribe the volume and intensity in these. The most effective way to stimulate the physical adaptations. We add circuits in if there is a specific training goal or if an athlete is injured or they don't have access to these facilities. So a lot of our circuits are done with body weight or limited equipment and can be done in boxing gyms. So that's the way that we do it at Boxing Science. We'd implement these as a supplement to an athlete's conditioning rather than being a full kind of like 5 times a week, this is what the conditioning is. So what I would say to Aiden is maybe reduce the circuits to twice per week, so not totally like getting rid of these circuits, twice per week, and then add in 2 or 3 high-intensity conditioning sessions instead, either on treadmill or on the assault bike. Okay, so cues for engaging the core more during a punch. This is a really interesting question because the core is integral to producing fast and hard punches. We train it in a very generic way, but how do we transfer that into a punch-specific action? We know at Boxing Science that the core is really important for punching power, because lean mass of the trunk correlates with punching power. And also we know that our rotational strength and speed test has the highest transfer into the ability to throw hard on the landmine punch throw. So with these two metrics here, we need to make sure that we're optimizing these in a very generic way with our core training principles, but with a very specific outcome, because we know that this transfers towards faster and harder punches. Training very generic in terms of like these exercises can be adapted to any different sport, but then towards the back end of training camp, we look to do like more speed strength exercises that are challenging rotational power and kinetic chain sequencing that then can transfer into the punching action. It's the key way at Boxing Science that we try and get the core working better during punching. However, there are different things that you can do in a very technical format. You can do punch isometric holds. We do this either on the wall or doing it partner assisted, where an athlete is having to get into that punch action, driving against an immovable object. And the challenge is to create stiffness and tension through the arm, the core, and the lower body. At these end ranges, the athlete are having to try and produce as much power as possible. And with that, the core has to be switched on. So that's a really good cue to use to get the core fired up during punching. You can do this during a taper phase and speed phase in your strength conditioning sessions, but also it's really important to do in your boxing sessions as well. So I'll often tell athletes to do punch isometric holds in their warm-up before they go onto the pads or the bags. We also do this during fight week if they're going to do their pad work, and also we do it on fight night as well to get them prepped, ready to go into boxing. And then away from that, just technical cues during your shadow boxing. I think that shadow boxing with dumbbells is a great tool as well, because you're actually trying to hold it at that end range and your core has to be switched on there as well. So a few different things that you can do without really messing up with your technique to prepare long-term and acutely going into your boxing session, where the core activation is cued more or less subconsciously. Because the last thing that you want to do when you're throwing a punch is thinking, right, is my core switched on? Okay, so you need to train the body long-term and then obviously acutely just before you go into a session. So then that core activation, that cueing, is a subconscious action. Another question from Aiden Leong TV. Thoughts on Michael Chandler's strength and conditioning workouts / programs. So my thoughts on Michael Chandler's strength and conditioning is that he's really good. A fantastic athlete, he's strong, he's explosive, he moves really well as well. Some of his kettlebell work is fantastic, and some of the exercises that he uses, in fact, the exercises that we use at Boxing Science. The two little things that I'd probably say in terms of like how it transitions from MMA to boxing is that he does very conditioning-based work, and also he does complex training. The conditioning-based work is like stuff like going from a squat into a prowler and doing a lot of these heavy-based activities as part of a conditioning circuit. Boxers are not as strong as MMA athletes or as proficient, and also they need to really optimize their aerobic capacity. Whereas like in MMA, they're strong, they move well, and they also need a mixed bag of abilities in terms of like their combat sports, but also they need a mixed bag of physical characteristics as well. They need to be performing at higher kind of lactate values, and also they need that strength and that power and that strength endurance as well. That's why it's great for Michael Chandler, but maybe not so good for boxing. And also his complex training is like he does like a trap bar deadlift into a squat drum almost with no rest. However, we know from the research is that complex training is very individualized, but we look to around a minute to 2 minutes of rest time between your strength exercise and your speed and power exercise. This makes sure that the fatigue from the first exercise isn't overmasking the potentiating factors from the first exercise going into the speed and power exercise. Michael Chandler, strong, proficient, does a lot of strength and conditioning training. He might be able to benefit from this short rest time. However, boxers with low strength training history and also in a very depleted state in terms of their making weight and also high training loads, they will struggle with this rest time to make sure that they're getting as much speed and power and potentiation going into that speed and power exercise. So what I would say with this complex training is that to transfer from MMA to boxing, I'd be more looking to do a longer rest time between the heavy set into the lighter, more explosive set. But big respect to him. He puts out a lot of content of his training, which I think is really beneficial for S&C and MMA community and also the boxing community. It might be worth a Boxing Science Reacts episode. So Tom Bagley 10 has asked, what are the best fitness trackers / watchers for boxing, excluding the H10? So I think that there is some conflicting evidence on which is the best watch or fitness tracker. What is the best way to monitor like wellness and everything like that? So we kind of steer away from using these kind of technologies. So we keep it really simple at Boxing Science. We just say to use a heart rate monitor, encourage people to either get the Polar heart rate monitor or the Wahoo ticker. These can be accessed on Amazon. Both these heart rate monitors link up to the Polar Beat app. And the reason why we go for the Polar Beat app, it makes it really clear on what zone an athlete is working in, whether that is in their recovery zones or whether it's in the red zone. It also monitors how many calories that they expend. And also you can share your login to Coach. They can easily access heart rate data for your sessions. And we'd encourage athletes to be wearing the heart rate monitor for boxing sessions, even in sparring, and also their conditioning sessions. It might be handy to get some sort of smartwatch. It doesn't matter which one, as long as you're doing the same one, just to like cover like steps and like different activities throughout. Because if an athlete is training hard during training camp, they often like try and chill out for the rest of the time and their actual daily activity reduces. With that daily activity reducing, this might affect Apple Watch or something like that to just wear, to just track what their daily walking activity is like, trying to maintain that throughout the training camp to make sure we've got a good idea on how many calories, how much energy to put into that athlete to make sure that they're fueling performance and also making weight safely and effectively. Okay guys, so that's the end of this week's episode of the Boxing Science Podcast. Thank you very much for watching. Like I said in the intro, a lot of people watch the Boxing Science YouTube channel, but they're not subscribing. If you subscribe today, it's going to really help us boost this channel, grow this channel, and give you even more content. If you're wanting to find out more about the Boxing Science training methods, go and check out the website, boxingscience.co.uk. And go and check out our programs and products, where we've got a wide range of different ebooks and programs on strength, conditioning, and also nutrition. And you can get 50% off by using the code BOXINGSCIENCE50 off your first purchase. And if you're wanting to follow the Blueprint to Elite Performance, you should check out the Train Like a Champion membership, where you can follow the Boxing Science training methods for just £19.99 a month. So that's the end of the episode, guys. Thank you very much for watching. Hopefully see you on the next episode of Boxing Science Podcast.